Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 11, The Childhood Pastimes of Krishna, Text Number 12. Saritrin Gatam Krishnam Bhaga Narjunam Atavayat Ramam Charohini Devi Kreed Dantam Balakar Brisham Sarit Tira to the riverside Gatam who had gone Krishnam unto Krishna Vagna Arjunam after the pastime of breaking the Yamala Arjuna trees. Ata, then, Avayat, called, Ramam, Cha, as well as Balaram, Rahini, the mother of Balaram, Devi, the goddess of fortune, Kridantam, were engaged in playing, Balakai, with many other boys, Risham, with deep attention. Translation, once after the uprooting of the Yamala Arjun trees, Rahini Devi went to call Ram and Krishna, who had both gone to the riverside and were playing with other boys with deep attention. Purport, Mother Jasoda was more attached to Krishna Balaram than Rahini Devi was. Although Rahini Devi was the mother of Balaram, Mother Jasoda sent Rahini Devi to call Ram and Krishna in their play, since it was the right time for lunch. Therefore, Rahini Devi went to call them, breaking their engagement in play. Generally, most of the Bhagavatam, from the first canto to the ninth canto, is all about how we can believe Krishna is God. How we can understand Krishna's supremacy, how we can understand Krishna, how we can understand Krishna's devotees. But the 10th canto is not so philosophical. It's pastimes, lila. And generally speaking, one can understand lila after understanding, first of all, the name. Because the name is spiritual. As it says that Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purno Shudo Niti Mukto Binatvam Nama Namino Binatvam Nama Namino. That the name of Krishna and Krishna himself are not different. So if we chant Hare Krishna and we don't experience how Krishna and his name are not different, then it's very unlikely that we'll spontaneously remember Krishna's form when we chant. And if we don't remember Krishna's form, then we won't be able to feel his very easily, either his name or in his form, we won't be able to feel his presence very easily. And if we don't feel his presence, then we won't understand what his qualities are. And if we don't understand his qualities, we won't understand his associates, their loving exchanges with Krishna. And if we don't understand their loving exchanges with Krishna, we won't be able to understand the pastimes of Krishna. So here we are in the 10th canto, and we can read the story. As a matter of fact, there's not very many purports. Prabhupada doesn't write very many purports. This is not a... The verses themselves we're supposed to experience. That if we had a spiritual body, if we were in our... Of course, we are a spiritual body. But if we were absorbed in our spiritual identity rather than our illusory identity, then when we heard these stories, we'd actually enter into them. We could actually experience them to different degrees or even enter into them. Therefore, no amount of philosophy is going to explain to us what the stories are about because the stories are absolute. It's not that if you go when we go back to the spiritual world and Krishna is having a pastime like pulling down the Arjuna trees and then we're a new resident Vrindavan, of Goloka Vrindavan, and we asked one of the other residents, what is the significance of this pastime? What's the deep inner meaning of Krishna pulling down Arjun trees? They look at us as if we were crazy, because we would be crazy. They'd say, where have you been? What are you talking about? So the pastimes are all in a nature prema. The other parts of the Bhagavatam deal with beginning trying to come to the platform of liberation out of the bodily concept of life. But this is way beyond that. This is on the platform of prema bhakti, which is millions of times more intense than bhava bhakti, when we're always in ecstasy. I'd imagine most of us are not always in ecstasy 24 hours a day. Nor are we liberated from the material concepts of life. Therefore, how to actually approach this? Well, the only way of really taking advantage of these verses is either just read them, which is probably the best thing to do, in sequence, just to get an idea of what the spiritual world is like. But not to take it that we've actually experienced, we've understood anything when we read these stories, because unless we have spiritual senses and experience them, then that is the understanding. And without that experience, with spiritual senses, then we're just more or less getting an idea what this is all about. The other way of looking at it, the other way of dealing with it, is to visualize it and try to experience it with our senses, try to hear what's going on, try to smell what's going on, try to taste what's going on, according to our ability, and just making it a little bit more, it's called active reading, rather than just think that we're reading and it's just some words on a page, but actually try to experience them. We do that all the time, unfortunately. If you go and watch any kind of movie, even a spiritual movie, that when we're remembering it, if we actually really like the movie, we'll remember the songs, we'll remember the sights, because I don't think the smells, you can, sometimes people imagine, they make it. So we actively participate, and even when we read stories, regular mundane stories, if one knows how to read, one actively reads. If you hear about Alice in Wonderland, you heard Alice in Wonderland. So, it's not difficult to imagine a rabbit with a pocket watch running into a hole and Alice following him. It's not difficult. Now, these stories we may not take as even as seriously as Alice in Wonderland. In other words, no one will read Alice in Wonderland or The Wizard of Oz, or any other story, unless they're actively reading to some extent, because otherwise it's boring. The whole idea of these stories is to awaken one's imagination and go for a ride with one's imagination. So, imagination also means to make an image of something. Now, out of the different deities, one of the seven kinds of deities is to a deity within the mind. Those who have read the Nectar Devotion will find out that in one chapter, one devotee who didn't have very much money, he went to some lectures and he heard about that you can actually worship the deity if within your mind, by meditation. So he tried it out for many years. He was sitting down by the bank of the Ganges, and first he'd do pranayama, because he didn't know yoga was bad for you. He didn't know he was falling into Maya when he did pranayama. Anyhow, he did it, because everyone else was doing it. And that settled his mind. So then he would imagine the deities within his mind. And then he would imagine taking gold and silver pots, water pots, and going to the Ganges, the Jamuna, the Saraswati, Narmada, and he'd gather water and gold and silver pots to bathe the deities. No one told him it was wrong to do that. As a matter of fact, he had heard from the reliable sources that there was an acceptable point type of devotional service. And he dressed the deities within his mind, and he'd cook for the deities within his mind, and that way he went on for many years worshipping the deities. Now we may come to him and say that, you know, what are you wasting your time? It's all just mental. Get off the mental platform. Do something physical. Do something practical. But actually Krishna was accepting his service as equally as if he was doing it physically. And then one day, as we might know, he was cooking sweet rice. And sweet rice should be served as cool as possible, especially in India. Have you ever taken hot sweet rice in India? It's always served cold.
Yeah. Yeah, but sometimes in Mayapur, when we were eating prasad, they would serve not cold, but not too hot, but not cold either.
Well, it definitely shouldn't be taken hot. You'll get diarrhea if you take hot sweet rice. In any case, he wanted to make sure he wanted to find out what the temperature of the sweet rice was. So he put his finger in it and it burnt. It was too hot. So he woke up out of his trance and he saw his finger was burnt. So he was surprised that he thought he was just doing it in meditation. But actually, it had a physical result also. His finger got burnt. And in Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan was laughing. And the Lakshmis were wondering, why is Lord Narayan laughing? And so Lord Narayan called for a Vaikuntha airplane, came and picked up the Brahmin and brought him to Vaikuntha. And there he explained to the Lakshmis what was going on, how this Brahmin was engaged in so many years of meditation and service. So we also have to learn to use our, quote, imagination. Because Krishna says, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmaryu drita ayarpita manobudhir mam evaishati samshaya. Therefore, Arjuna, you should think of me in the form of Krishna. At the same time, carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your mind and intelligence fixed on me and everything engaged in me, you'll attain to me without doubt. Of course, that doesn't mean that when we're cooking, we should do something where we're just meditating on Krishna and spacing out. And the sweet rice not only gets burnt, but the kitchen catches on fire. But we think that's all right. At least I'm meditating on Krishna. I know my whole body is burning. Maybe Krishna will send me the Vaikuntha airplane, pick me up. No, it should come spontaneously and naturally. The Brahmin didn't have something else he had to do for Krishna service. And he was following authority. And it's an example given in the Nectar of Devotion. So similarly, we should do our service, but if we have a conception, we don't have to meditate directly on Krishna's form and do deity worship within the form. But if we have a conception that everything here is Krishna's energy, and therefore I should utilize whatever energies, according to the author, according to Krishna's representative, the guru, the sadhu, the shastra, I should serve Krishna with his energies in order to please him, and then naturally we'll think about him. Similarly, if we go out and chant to please Krishna, or go out and distribute books to please Krishna, then the result is we'll think about Krishna. Then the purpose of being out there will not be to hear how wonderful my voice is, or to get a score of how many books I'm doing, but every person that we approach will think that this is Krishna's eternal servant, and I'm giving him a book so he can revive his relationship with Krishna. And that's the only reason why I'm doing it. Then this, of course, we're interested in everyone, as many people as possible, get a book. Therefore, naturally, there'll be some score, but the purpose won't be a score. It'll be actually to serve Krishna and his interests, which is directly to give people transcendental knowledge, which they can utilize to revive their relationship with him. So similarly, when we read these stories, we should try to use our intelligence in such a way as to figure out how to experience. Like here, there's two Yamala Arjuna trees. Most of us probably never seen an Arjuna trees, but to speak of a Yamala Arjuna tree. Have you ever seen a Yamala Arjuna tree? Do you know what one is? Do you know what a Yamala Arjuna tree is? Has anyone ever seen a Yamala Arjuna tree? Yeah, I mean, you've seen plenty of big trees, but it's a tree. The Arjuna trees are used for, in Ayurveda, their bark is very good. They make preparations from the bark for the heart conditions. It's the main preparation for heart. And they're big trees. I guess they're big trees, obviously. They were surprised that a little boy like Krishna could knock them over. So they must have been fairly big. So see, big trees. When we hear, after uprooting of the tree, and see two big trees uprooted. That's called active reading. It means we're actually using our intelligence to actually hear what's being said. Now we may think, well, these are not exactly the same Arjuna trees, but they're good enough. And Rohini Devi. So we have to see a gopi named Rohini Devi. And then she went to call Krishna and Ram. Ram and Krishna. So then we can see Krishna and Rama, or Ram and Krishna, playing with the cowherd boys. Who had both gone to the river side. So we can see the river Jamuna and Krishna and the cowherd boys playing. So that's called active listening. We're actually participating. We're not just kind of sitting there waiting for something to happen. We're actually using our intelligence to make something happen within our consciousness. Otherwise, many times devotees read the books and they don't read actively, and it becomes boring after some time. It's like eating a meal and you don't taste anything. How long are you going to eat something if you don't taste it? Not only that, you don't digest anything. Whatever goes in, goes out. You haven't tasted anything. You haven't digested anything. You haven't gotten anything out of it. The only thing that got exercise is your jaws. Someone has to also read with the idea of tasting something and digesting something. Otherwise, one will not have any attraction to it. And therefore, one won't be, the choice is between watching a movie or even a devotional movie or eating prasadam or going to sleep or reading. It's an obvious choice. Let's go to sleep. It's a direct experience of Brahman. It's not theoretical, it's direct. So Krishna consciousness also has to be an experience. Has to be a direct experience. That's something that we're going to experience when we get to Prema Bhakti in 300 million lifetimes from now. Otherwise, Krishna consciousness will be boring. And we don't want to be bored. No one spends their life boring. We'll have to do something else. So then it talks about Mother Jasoda. So here in Ljubljana, Mother Jasoda has appeared. Do you know where she's appeared? So we don't have to imagine what she looked like. Someone else has already done it for us. And Rohini, so we can see Mother Jasoda was more attached to Krishna Balaram. So that's obvious. She's been holding him since I've been here. She must be quite attached to him. Amala comes around once in a while and the ladies here would like to hug him. But Mother Jasoda's been hugging Krishna, at least since I've been here. So she's quite attached to him. Anyhow, in that way we can try to get the most we can out of each verse. And the result is, well, probably even during the day we might even remember what we read. Now, we should go through the 10th canto, because reading it sequentially. Prabhupada didn't really do that. Prabhupada didn't lecture on the 10th canto. Even when he was writing on the 10th canto, he didn't lecture on it. And basically speaking, he lectured on philosophy, because he knew that the devotees just weren't on the level of trying to they didn't have such controlled minds that they could actually even think about meditating on these pastimes. And if they did, they might get the wrong idea about Krishna and what he's doing with the gopis or what was actually going on. Therefore, Prabhupada lectured on from the beginning that we're not the body for years, because we're still not convinced of that. Therefore, it's not a bad thing to bring up. And how to take shelter of the super soul, that there's a guide. We can actually ask Krishna, what does he want us to do, rather than what my mind and senses are telling me to do. We can actually ask the super soul and his representatives what he wants us to do, and therefore he'll help us make progress in devotional service. And then later on, Krishna will start revealing within our heart how to actually meditate on him. But he's already revealing, that's why I'm giving the class, to a small extent. But we shouldn't think, well, now I'm going to read this book, I'm going to enter into Goloka Vrindavan. Most of us will probably forget what I said within 15 minutes walking out of the classroom. But if we apply it in our reading, then our reading will become much more enjoyable, much more rewarding. And the result is we'll probably read more. It won't be a big tour. Oh my God, it's time to read. I feel tired. As soon as someone says read, immediately I feel tired. Or hungry. Let me eat a sandwich and read. Do something practical. So I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Yes. Microphone.
I was thinking about Bhagavatam, if it's also in Goloka Dham.
Goloka Dham? The Bhagavatam? Everything is a Bhagavatam in the Goloka Vrindavan. There's nothing but the Bhagavatam, the glories of Krishna. They don't have books in the Goloka, they don't need books.
That is exactly what I was thinking, if they need the books or
no. They're always remembering Krishna. Iti guyatamam shastram idam yuktva mayanaga etam buddhva buddhimatsyat krita kritas bharata yomam evam asambuddha janati purushottama sasaravit prajante mam sarabhavena bharata. One who knows me is the Supreme Personality of Godhead without any doubt, is said to be the knower of everything, and therefore he engages himself in full devotional service. This is the most confidential part of all the Vedic knowledge. Anyone who knows this will become wise, and his endeavors will become successful. So they don't need to. They're already engaged perfectly in Krishna service, so they know everything that has to be known. Anything else? Yes.
Krishna, thank you for the lecture. So, well, as it seems, at least for me personally, that sometimes it's easier to attentively read than to attentively chant, at least somewhat attentively read.
Yeah, because when we chant, when the mind wanders, then we have a good excuse because it's just the same thing over and over again. So then we may go with our mind, then we go, okay, maybe I should try and chant a little bit. But if we read and we miss out on what was reading, we immediately see we're spaced out. I'm just wasting my time. I just, because it's something new, something our mind should capture. Otherwise we see we're wasting our time. We're chanting, we're just thinking, I'm making progress. I'm getting my rounds done. We don't care if we heard anything or not. We had an experience. We just get the success is getting our rounds done. And sometimes devotees read just because they set up a goal, a certain amount of pages a day, and they just get through it. They feel good. I did my goal today. They didn't get anything out of it, except they feel good about themselves that they did their goal. So when we chant, we shouldn't think my success in my for the day is I got my rounds done. I'm a good person. I'm a good devotee. See, look at my beads. See the counter beads. See, this is the proof. Don't criticize me. I did my rounds. And we should also see if we're getting anything out of the chanting too. I'm trying to pay a little attention, like we would reading a book. Otherwise, we wouldn't read the book. Unless we try to get something out of it. But how much we get out of reading the book will depend upon how much we know how to read books. And how much we apply that in reading the book. Similarly with the chanting. How much we get out of the chanting will depend upon how much we know how to chant and how we apply ourselves to what we know. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna. My question is, how can we increase our detachment from the material world, and how can we increase our attachment for Krishna?
Very simple. Pay attention. We're just used to, whatever we pay attention to, we increase our attachment to. If we pay attention, if you decide to watch a movie, even say Avatar, I think they had a new Avatar. So, did you ever see a movie like Avatar? Yeah. So if you see, no one has to tell you how to increase your attachment to it. It's actually made to make you attached to it. That's why they spend millions and hundreds of millions of dollars on these things. So similarly, because, and then we'll pay attention. Then you can't forget it. You're hooked on it. And you try to forget it. You can't forget it. Until you see it's boring. You use a little intelligence. It's the same old movie. Man, Avatar meets girl. They fall in love. Someone else comes and try to fight Avatar. Avatar wins. Boy and girl live happily ever after. Till the next sequel. So we pay attention, and therefore we become attached to it. So if we pay attention to the chanting or anything we're doing in devotional service, then if we get some experience from it, if we do it properly, then we become, our attachments develop, but we get a higher taste. Whatever makes us happy, we pay attention to, and leads us to attachment to it. Anything else? Khala, Granthara Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.